This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Stephanie McLean. On tonight's edition of The Informer, we'll be continuing our discussion from last week on homophobic violence in Victoria with Joe Fujimaki, who has been a victim of homophobic violence. We'll also have a chat to Victoria Police's Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp, who was eager to have his say on this important issue. We also want to hear from you. You can have your say by sending an email to onair@joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427 JOY949. On today's edition of The Informer, matters of violence are certainly on the agenda for this year's federal budget, but homophobic violence is something that is often overlooked, with currently 7 out of 10 people in metropolitan areas not reporting this kind of harassment and 9 out of 10 people in regional areas not reporting the issue. It seems homophobic or heterosexist violence is very prevalent in our society. Last week, we merely scraped the surface on this issue, and when we were producing that show, we were surprised with the willingness from members of the community to come forward and shed light on this issue. One of those individuals was Victoria Police's Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp. DC Crisp was really keen to have his say on homophobic violence in Victoria and wants to keep the conversation open for further discussion in the near future. We'll hear from DC Crisp a little later. Before that, earlier today I caught up with Joe Fujimaki, a university student from Melbourne who experienced homophobic harassment a few years ago when he was out with some friends in the city. This is The Informer on Joy 94.9. Joe, thanks for joining me over the phone today.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Steph.
And thanks for being brave enough to share your experience. Can you just kind of tell us about what happened when you experienced your incidents of homophobic harassment?
I know. So I was just, I was in the city with some friends and we were walking along Elizabeth Street. And I didn't notice it, but these people came up behind us, and just two guys, and suddenly felt something wet on my back. And then my friends all turned to me and say, "They just poured their drink on you." And at the moment, I was kind of not sure what to think. And then when we kind of approached them about it, they had a go at us about being gay. And yeah, so that was just a bit of a shock, and it was kind of, why would they do that? And yeah, I was a bit taken aback, really.
Were there any, like, exchange of words, or was there something in particular that they said?
Yeah, so, like, apart from, you know, having a go at us because we were gay, when my friends got a bit heated, they started saying things like, "Oh, you know, you would like to, you know, come and touch us, I guess," and stuff like that. Just,
sorry, what did they said, "Do you want to come and touch us?"
They said you would want to come and get near us or come and touch us, wouldn't you?
Like implying that you would...
You know, into them because that's how it is, I guess.
And what was your response to that?
It was just, I guess when you're approached by that kind of thing, there's no winning, especially just in the moment. I mean, apart from just having another goal at them being like, "Oh, you're dickheads," there's not much you can do. You just kind of have to walk away.
That's interesting that you say that there's no winning, because clearly when somebody says something like that to you, it is unacceptable. I mean, is that generally how you and other people you know feel when these things happen?
I guess, yeah, there's a certain level of apathy you feel towards it, just because, I mean, in the moment, what can you do? You can't really sit them down in the middle of the city, have a talk with them about why it's wrong. People like that, people that would say stuff like that to you, they're not the kind of people that are receptive to you trying to convince them otherwise, trying to show them another way of thinking. That's why they are the way they are, because of that ignorance that they hold.
And do you, I mean, you said at the time that you were kind of surprised that they said those things to you, but have you heard about these things happening to other people in your social group?
Yeah, I mean, for me, coming out in high school and stuff, it was a really easy experience. But then I had one of my close friends same high school who, when he came out, his high school experience is really different. So it's, I have heard about it, but that was the first instance of it happening to me personally. But yeah, for sure, you do definitely see it occurring around you.
So would you consider yourself lucky then that you had, you know, like a special group of friends or very supportive people around you when you were coming out?
I do feel really fortunate, and it makes it even more frustrating to know that I know of, like, having experienced a relatively okay kind of life so far, to know that other people have to go through so much hardship. It's a really frustrating thing.
And when things like that happen, like when somebody yells out something to you in the street or insults you in the way that they did, did you feel insecure? Did that make you feel insecure? Do you think that's kind of shaped who you are? Do you feel confident in being who you are in society?
I think at first, coming out, and that time, I guess it makes the whole process a bit more difficult to know that there are people in the world that are against you in that way. The more you get along, the more you kind of realize that it's on them. And if it does affect me, I reckon it just makes me more resolute in my confidence about being happy in who I am.
When you experienced this incident, did you feel compelled to tell the police or to report it?
I did, I guess. In the moment, I didn't think it was a big enough issue. For me, it was like the first time that it happened, and I guess I kind of walked away from it thinking that was really crazy, but I don't know, yeah, I guess I didn't. I feel like I should have in retrospect.
Do you think you would have been taken seriously had you walked into a police station to report that someone had harassed you in the street?
I hope so. I really hope that I would be listened to. As with anybody, if anybody's suffered any kind of injustice, you'd hope you'd be listened to. I guess that's the assumption.
And what about the police? Like, do you think that these kinds of issues are something that the police take seriously?
Yeah, I think they do. I think that the police force is a really diverse organisation, and there are lots of people that make up it. But on the whole, I think they are trying, and I think it's part of the solution to work together and not be antagonistic towards each other to be able to create a safer environment for all of us.
In terms of going out, do you tend to go to certain places where you might be around other, you know, from the gay community or other gay men or from the LGBTI community? Or do you kind of feel like you can kind of, you know, go anywhere and feel accepted anywhere? Do you think people tend to congregate because they feel safer within their own community?
I think, yeah, for sure. There are kind of areas, obviously, that there are more like, say, gay bars. But I personally don't really exclusively just go out to those particular areas. I kind of go where my friends go, and if that is to a gay bar, that's to a gay bar. If it's not, then, yeah, I can't say that being gay really dictates where I go out too much.
Thanks for joining us for a chat today. It's been really good to have your insight. And thanks for being brave enough to share your experience on the radio.
No, thanks for listening.
This is The Informer, Joy's brand new current affairs program. That was me talking to Joe Fujimaki earlier today about his experience of homophobic harassment in Melbourne. He was kind enough to share his experience with us. Although it wasn't pleasant, Joe was lucky as he wasn't injured in this incident, but there are many others who have suffered physical abuse at the hands of homophobic perpetrators, which is something that we really need to speak out about. And of course, we do need the support from the government. We spoke to Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project last week, who are doing fabulous work for victims of violence and homophobic violence in Melbourne. You know, they are a great organisation who are unfunded, and so we do hope to see a change and more support from the government in future for organisations that are doing such worthwhile work to change the attitudes in Melbourne. Next, we'll hear from Victoria Police's Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp, who was eager to spread a message of support from Victoria Police to the community. I caught up with DC Crisp last week, and here's what he had to say. Thanks for joining us on The Informer, Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp.
Thanks. Oh, it's great. Good to be here, Stephanie, and please just call me Andrew. It's too long a title.
It is a long title, actually. I was thinking DC or Deputy Commissioner. Okay, so we're talking about homophobic violence in Victoria. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, where is the starting point for combating this kind of violence in Victoria?
I think the starting point is it's actually quite sad, and it's a shame we actually even have to be talking about it. From a Victoria Police perspective, again, we treat everyone equally and everyone fairly. And for us, it's about promoting, I suppose, the trusting relationships with all communities and people having the confidence to actually come forward and report instances to us. Because that's for me, that's the very clear message. I don't think we well enough understand the level of violence, homophobic, biphobic, transphobic, out there in the community and communities. We want to hear what's actually happening, because unless we actually know what's happening, it's really hard for us to combat that. But as I said, it's sad that we even have to be talking about this in the first place.
And in addition to kind of the underreporting of this kind of violence in the community, why else do you think the community doesn't understand what the needs of these people are?
Look, we have a very diverse community. I hate to say it, but there are people out there that will always target people that are different to themselves. I believe, you know, the vast majority of people, you know, go about their everyday business and treat everyone with dignity and respect. Diversity, unfortunately, actually threatens some people, and it manifests itself at times in violence, and it's wrong, and it shouldn't happen, and we want those instances to be reported to us.
So when you talk about building trust with the community, can you tell us a little bit about what the police are doing to engage with the community, like what strategies they're using?
Yeah, I'd suggest we've come a long way. You know, I've been in this organisation for, you know, 37 years now, and again, we wouldn't have been talking about GLBTI, these sorts of issues, you know, on radio, and it's great now that we actually do that. So we've come a long way as an organisation. In 2000, we sort of started our gay and lesbian liaison officer program, and again we've now got about 100 GLOs across the state, and easily accessible. Do a fantastic job. So they're really doing that grassroots work for us in the community. At an organisational level, there's a need for us to better understand what policies actually make us, I'd suggest, an employer of choice for people from GLBTI communities. And we have a significant number of people from those communities as members of Victoria Police, both sworn and VPS, and that's fantastic. You know, anything we can do to grow the diversity within our own organisation, so much the better. We're learning from the community. So 2013, under Ken Lay, he established the Priority Communities Division. So it focuses on a number of different communities. Well, the GLBTI community is one of those areas that has a portfolio manager. There's a reference group which involves and includes, you know, key people from the communities, and they help inform us. So they've been doing some recent work with us around our equity and diversity plan, so ensuring that it reflects GLBTI communities, and so it helps us make us a better organisation and be an employer of choice for people from those communities. I'll be frank, you know, I probably have more to do with multicultural communities than the GLBTI, and that part of my reason for being here, and I want to have some ongoing relationship with you and with your organisation. I want to come back. I want to learn. It's important for me to learn. But in terms of the multicultural communities, you know, I do a lot of work there. I chair that particular reference group, and I know, again, we're a better organisation because we're actually listening to people from those communities. But when I go to a number of community events for new and emerging communities, you know, I say the organisation looks too much like me. Old, white, male, bald, if you could see me. But I suppose I should almost add another line to that, you know, heterosexual. So the other bit, you know, it does look too much like me. I heard a quote a little while ago, which I like, and I keep repeating, because for me it tells a message about where we want to get to. And it says that diversity is the destination, inclusion is the journey. We're not the destination, we're still on the journey.
So in your 37 years of experience in the police force, which is quite extensive, congratulations, has it been a difficult transition? Because obviously attitudes towards communities such as the LGBTI community were very different almost 40 years ago. Being homosexual was indeed illegal.
It was a criminal offence.
Yeah, it was a criminal offence. So has it been a difficult transition for you? And if not, what about the other people that you've worked with?
Look, for me, in all honesty, and people listening might say, well, it's easy for you to say that. No, it really hasn't brought about any change in my behaviour or my thinking. You know, I'd like to think that I've always treated, you know, everyone with dignity and respect. However, you know, it's interesting because I suppose I'll talk about it in terms of white ribbon and family violence. And it's that piece about, well, you know, I don't believe I've ever actively engaged in discriminating against anyone. However, have I heard the bad jokes, whether that be in relation to family violence or gender equity or in relation to GLBTI communities? Yeah, I would have. I can't recall the last time, but certainly early in my career. Did I ever stand up and say to someone that's inappropriate? I can't ever recall doing that. So I think that's a significant shift for us as an organisation. I think we've got a lot of good people that actually don't engage in poor behaviour, but it's about taking that next step, about standing up and actually when something is being said, whether it's a joke or you know, a throwaway line, that we actually say, well, no, that's inappropriate. And again, we'll become a better organisation when we start engaging more in that behaviour. And to the credit of Ken Lay, I guess taking from General Morrison, who was the former head of Army, and, you know, it's a whole bystander effect. You know, if you believe in something strong enough, you actually got to stand up for it.
Yeah, and so what kinds of training strategies are being used in the police force to kind of help police officers to understand the needs of LGBTI people when they do come forward and report, which they don't often? We spoke to Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project last week, who said that 7 out of 10 people in metropolitan areas don't report, and 9 out of 10 in regional areas don't report incidences of homophobic violence. So what kind of training takes place?
More broadly, when people join Victoria Police now and go through the training at the Police Academy, so there is the Community Encounters program where people from a whole range of different communities come in and sort of tell their story. So, you know, it's at that, you know, very basic level of training at the Academy where people will become exposed to people from GLBTI communities and multicultural communities and various other communities. ACLOS do a very good job. I know a number are really active in terms of better educating police members at their respective stations. So again, there's opportunities to do even more around that about educating people.
Greg actually had really positive feedback for the Victorian Police. He said that nowadays there's a response from the Victorian Police that he has never seen before, and he's been in this business for a long time. But unfortunately, there is that kind of stigma attached to police that still is, which is something that he suggested, that people won't come forward because they still have that kind of lag from when, you know, homosexuality was illegal, that the police won't care or they won't listen. How do we communicate, or how are you working to communicate that you are there to listen and that you are there to support people?
Well, being here today, speaking to you is a big part of that. I won't profess to have all the answers around that. So it's really important for me and for us as an organisation to listen to what the communities actually have to say about this. Again, we know that I'll keep going back to GLOWS because, you know, they are actually being very proactive. There was an incident recently, someone driving along, and by chance it was actually recorded, where someone was called a poofter, and it got posted on social media. One of our GLOWS picked this up and forwarded on to another GLOW who investigated, and subsequently that person was interviewed and received a fine for offensive language. That's a good news story in terms of an outcome, but at the same time, it's a shame that the individual actually, and I don't know the reason why they didn't actually sort of pull into the nearest police station and actually report it at the time. We want to hear that firsthand. So again, people that, you know, based on what they're, whether it's the reality or the perception of Victoria Police, that they're not comfortable and confident coming forward, can actually change that attitude.
I mean, what is the best practice then? Like, would third party, if we were to implement third party reporting in Victoria, where the LGBTI community would have somebody to go to who could then pass on their complaint to the police, do you think that would be the best practice?
I think best practice is where the GLBTI communities have the utmost faith and confidence that whatever they can walk into a police station, report over the counter an incident that has occurred, and again be confident that will be fully investigated by Victoria Police. I think that's best practice. Are we there yet? By all accounts, violence? No. But that's what we've got to aim for. We're certainly open to other avenues, but, you know, let's try and get to a position where, you know, we can work directly with the communities. Violence in any community is wrong. And so, you know, you've only got to look at the tragic incidents recently with, you know, the young fella who died out in the northeastern suburbs. So it's just wrong. So, you know, Victoria Police will always push that, you know, just whether it be one punch or it's violence specifically targeting certain communities, it's wrong. Other opportunities for us to look at how we could do that better, I'd suggest there are. And again, I'm more than happy to sit down with a group of people and let's explore that. You know, I want to come back. I want to hear. I want to listen to what the communities are actually saying about what more we can do to engage and all of us ensure that we live in a much safer, more harmonious city and state.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Andrew. It's been really wonderful to have a chat, and thanks for taking some time out from your annual leave to come into the studio today.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thanks very much, and I look forward to coming back if you'll have me.
Listening to Joy 94.9, this is The Informer. A full rundown on today's story will be on the Joy website shortly. That's www.joy.org.au/The Informer. Up next, though, we'll find out the latest headlines with Shannon Power, who's with us from the Star Observer. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Hi, Shannon, how are you going?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for joining us this evening.
That's right. Thank you for having me on this Anzac Day. I heard the weather's lovely down there in Melbourne.
Oh, it's been beautiful down here. Very unusual for this time of year. I've got Reese here with me too, who's going to have a chat to you about the headlines as well.
Hey, Shannon. How you doing?
Great, Reese. How are you?
Yeah, great. Can't wait to ask you a few questions.
Awesome.
So let's jump straight into this. Seeing as though we're on the topic of homophobic harassment, let's jump straight into this story about the AFL change policy after homophobic slurs. What's going on there?
So last Sunday, former Joy 94.9 newsreader Rod Swift was at a footy game, Fremantle versus North Melbourne. He was sitting in the cheer squad for Fremantle, which, you know, is, you know, just right behind the goals. And just in the outer, so if anyone's been to any sort of stadium, there's the seats, and then there's that sort of like fenced off area where people can just stand behind it before going to sit down. There's a group of about five guys shouting very homophobic and sexist slurs towards other spectators, towards players, particularly Fremantle players. And, you know, Rod, not being a wallflower, said something to security, said something to these guys, and was really offended and I guess put out by their behaviour. So what ensued was the security people said that they couldn't really do anything. The guys persisted. I think eventually the police did come down and chat with Rod and the men and the security guards. But what Rod decided to do, he was kind of set up with the behaviour that, you know, he'd encountered, not only last Sunday but on a few other occasions, and wrote to Gillian McLaughlin, who is the CEO of AFL, and just sort of questioned the AFL's ticketing policy, which doesn't, so, you know, the conditions of entry, there's a whole list of conditions of entry for people, but they don't include vilifying people based on race, sexuality, gender or ability. They, you're not allowed to racially vilify anyone, but the ticketing conditions didn't say that. So he wrote to them sort of questioning why they hadn't updated that. And to the AFL's credit, the Star Observer also chased them up and said, look, you know, technically these guys haven't broken any of your laws or rules based on the ticketing policy. And so within only 3 or 4 hours, Gillian McLaughlin had replied personally to Rod. The AFL got back to us and said they would immediately update their ticketing policy to reflect the general AFL policy of not vilifying anyone based on gender, sexuality or ability, which is fantastic because they did sign up to the Pride in Diversity Index, which meant that over the next year they would review homophobia in AFL at all levels and then commit to concrete action based on the outcome of what they found in this year of research and surveying. So I think that's a really good sign. I mean, obviously we're never going to wipe out homophobia 100%, but I guess if the big players in Australian society and the very influential people in society, including the AFL, we know how powerful they are in Melbourne, if they take that top-down approach and say enough is enough, we will act on this, I think it sends a very strong message, not only to footy goers, but to the society in general.
Definitely. And Shannon, it's just a really negative, typical, stereotypical thing to do. You know, these guys are obviously, well, probably, I'm assuming, under the influence of alcohol. They get a little bit excited and they just decide to negatively reflect their energy to a minority. And it's just not fair. And especially the people that are around these guys listening. There's kids in the audience, and we can't have our kids listen to this sort of, you know, I'd like to say a word on air, but I can't. But this stuff, we'll say stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the point that Rod made when we were chatting is, obviously, it's offensive behaviour, it's lewd. It doesn't happen at every game, and it doesn't happen very often. So I think the AFL is generally a safe-ish place compared to other sporting codes in Australia. But what if there had been people there who were affected by the comments that weren't as resilient as someone like Rod or as courageous as Rod? And it can really affect someone emotionally and psychologically. So we are a much more vulnerable community than others. And I think that is it as well. It might have been a trigger for someone, which we need to prevent at all costs.
Definitely. Well, look, it was a negative action, and it looks like the AFL has done all in its ability to make sure it has a positive ending, and they have updated their ticket information. Look, that's all we've got time for, unfortunately, today, Shannon. We do have to wrap it up, but thanks very much for your time. Obviously, you are from the Star Observer. Have a great rest of your Anzac Day.
Thank you. And make sure to log into Star Observer tomorrow. We've got two massive stories coming out, so do log in tomorrow and have a read of the website.
Definitely, we will do. Thanks, Shannon.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to my guests today, Joe Fujimaki and Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp from Victoria Police. Just one little reminder, if you did want to contact your nearest GLO, you can go to the Victoria Police website. I believe that's www.vic.gov.au. Today's show was produced by Adam Samuel, Rhys Tolhurst and myself, Stephanie McLean. For a podcast of today's program and other stories from The Informer, you can visit joy.org.au/The Informer. The Informer will be back tomorrow at 6:30, but up next is Outtakes with Daniel and Alan. I'm Stephanie McLean once again, and you're listening to Joy 94.9 FM.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.